Yo.
Hey.
Can you hear me?
You listening to
#WAW. What a week.
What a week.
Welcome to Wow, What a Week, part of the Africa Podcast Network. Reach us at waw@africapodcastnetwork.com. It's a week where the country hits stage 6 load shedding, but your mind might feel like it's on stage 10. Hopefully, we can get you to about stage 2, mentally speaking, of course. So thank you for joining us yet again.
This is...
Wow!
What a week.
What a week. You can't make this shit up.
So, what do you get when an insurance salesman, a call center agent, creative director, and a corporate communications person start a collective? Well, Goliath and Goliath and Goliath and Goliath. There's a lot of them, eh? Okay, not a punchline by any means, but that answer has provided a lot of entertainment and enjoyment. And today we have one of those Goliaths in the building. Please give a wow welcome to Jason, strangely sexy in a, why do I find him so sexy kind of way?
Confusing.
Goliath.
Wow, 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 wow.
Jason.
He's having a special one, baby. Wow, 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 wow. It's yours. Custom.
Wow, wow, wow,
wow, wow, wow.
Wow. Wow, dude, stop.
No one bought a ticket here. The jokes will not be great.
When did you get to dad joke status? I'm very offended.
Listen, I'm not a dad, but I am over 40. And as you know, a man's motor plan basically finishes at 40.
I know you're not supposed to ask people, you know, when do they plan to have kids. But do you and Sean plan to have a family by any chance?
No.
Or am I stepping over a line?
No. I mean, I'm wearing a condom right now. I'm not taking any chances. Yeah, and also fertile. El Dorado Park. The most fertile specimens. No, listen, if I flirt with you for too long, you're nauseous in the morning. I'm telling you. No, so you know, Sean and I got married late, and I think just made a decision that we're not going to have kids because of peer pressure. Because I know so many people that have kids. Not because they want a kid, not because their dynamic needs a kid. And for me, I was just sick and tired of people looking at it as a win-lose. And for me, it's a win-win. Like, it's a win if we don't. We'll live rock star lives. And the choices are simple. You know, have kids or do whatever we want. Or we'll win because I think we'll be great parents if I do put one past the keeper and, you know, accidents happen. So we're ready for anything, but the choice is not.
What was it about Sean that said, I think she's the one? Apart from the fact that, yes, I can pronounce her name.
Yes.
Because
yes.
It looks like Cyan.
Yes. Many people get it. Cyan is my favorite version.
In fact, from Eldos, I expect you to call her Cyan.
No, because she comes from Paul. Yeah. So, you know, she comes from Paul. And in Paul, Cyan is a name. That's,
oh, wow.
You know what I mean? So yes, I married a girl named Boy. That's essentially, no, that's not. You know what it was?
Yeah.
I can't explain this, but I've never met anybody who felt like... Enough. Like, okay. I can't explain it. Like, because I believe that, you know, in order to have the thing, you need somebody that's strong enough to push and keep you up. But not weak enough to fold and not too strong to fold you.
Comedians are so deep.
Find somebody.
Okay, so the right tension between the two of you.
The right everything, right energy. The first time I saw her, I was like, that's my size. She'd worked with Donovan.
That's my firstborn, Cyan.
And it took months. Donovan didn't introduce me because, you know, Donovan is famous for not giving through balls to anybody.
Yes.
Loves receiving a pass, but has never passed a ball in his life. And I kept saying to Don, introduce me to this thing's my size.
Yes.
This is my size. And she ignored me for months, and then eventually got to talk to her. Because, you know, I'm like you.
Yeah.
Where you know, you do well in nightclubs behind the decks. But if you're on the dance floor, you and me are not nightclub spec because we just look like Shrek in that lighting.
And I've seen you dancing, so
you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So but our English.
Oh yes.
You wanna put me at a braai face to face. And then once the English was in, then she saw the you know.
In fact, the first time I met Sean, she was a marketing manager at a casino.
She was PR manager, yeah.
PR manager at a casino, and we're shooting the cover for Fresh House Flavor 7. And she let us use the casino. They brought us all these chips.
Yeah.
But I naively forgot that those chips are worth a lot of money.
Of course.
So when the chips were brought into the room where we were shooting, it's literally a security procedure.
Well, it's money.
And it's money. We're literally playing with hundreds of thousands of rands of chips just to shoot a CD cover. And we'd throw them in the air and catch a shot, and then they'd have to come back and count them. and make sure that every chip is accounted for.
I want you to know that I don't think that was casino procedure. I just think that's when you have DJ Fresh procedure around my. How much exactly that's like? That's how they treat everyone. Just like, yeah, let them in, but make sure the MIBs, they call them, the men in black, are there.
Does getting into a committed relationship change in any way the complexion of the comedy you do?
So for me, I think it dramatically changed it. So I don't think that applies to every comic, but I do personal introspection about what's happening in my life right now, what I'm feeling, what I'm learning, what I'm going through, what I'm surviving. So obviously my comedy has now, a lot of it has become about relationships, wife. I mean,
you've turned into content, basically.
You know.
Sorry, Sean.
Yes. And also, baby, thank you. You know what I mean? I appreciate you, my darling.
What's the biggest gag your relationship has given you in your career?
The biggest gag my relationship has given me is I do a bit about this app called Clue, which I feel is not only the biggest gag, but it's the biggest piece of relationship advice I can give any married man.
Please advise us. I failed.
So listen, we and this is exactly how it happened. We got back from honeymoon, and that's, for those of you that aren't married, that's exactly when the change happens, because it's a very different animal. A fiance and a wife has a very different animal. Trust me. So we get back, and as her metamorphosis into wife is happening, she goes, "You need to download this app called Clue." I go, "What is Clue?" She goes, "Clue is a menstrual cycle tracker."
Oh,
and
wow.
So I make a joke and I go, "Oh, does that mean because I'm married, I'm going to menstruate too now?" And she goes, "No, don't be a fool. This is serious. You got to download the app, because the app is how I track my cycle." So she uses this app. She gives it information. The app then becomes an intermediary between her and her gynae. Then she said, "I can share my cycle with you so that you know what's going on in my body." Best advice ever. So I do a whole bit about having this app and how I use this app, like how you use the weather service.
In fact, I can only imagine, because obviously closer to ovulation, she'd be at her friskiest.
Yeah, 100%.
So you can actually get away with way more.
The app tells you.
You can ask her to put one leg on a chandelier and the other leg at the gate during the day of ovulation.
You don't need to bath on that day. Your man has that day. What are we showering? Shaving. If she just sees you underpante, corner of her eye.
Are you never been okay?
I always go, like, the whole month, her engine is like a Cressida.
Yeah.
On that day,
yeah.
Ovulation day, the uterus is glowing, chap. It's like E.T.'s finger. Ovulation day. No. You pull out game and point the next day. There's an arm that comes out and just,
Anyway, so we have you here for your comic, this Ishop. The Dalai Lama is in pool for asking a boy if he'd like to suck his tongue.
Can I just say that apparently R. Kelly was like, "Yeah, you see, you guys were on me. You see, this is natural. This is because I was grossed out.
Yeah.
I was grossed out on all of the levels, and also angry, because the initial response is the Pali just goes, "I'm sorry, I'm old."
In fact, there are people who try to justify it by saying, "But we know old people do things like that." But they shouldn't do things like that.
No.
We had an uncle when we were kids.
Yes.
He had a big beard.
Yeah.
And he loved kissing all of us. He loved kissing all of us. And whenever he was around, for me, it was a trauma, because I know we're all going to get a big kiss. But also, he'd also feel the girls to see, "Are your breasts growing?" And then he'd touch us, like, literally.
And you peep, and the family?
No, like you peep and go, and then go, like you're growing, man. But that was him. There was nothing appropriate about that. But because he's that uncle, he gets away with it.
And so for me, I'm sick and tired of us allowing that uncle to go, "No, but you know how he is. He just likes gentle fingering." No.
Yeah.
The body mustn't touch people.
Absolutely.
No, but you know how he is when he drinks.
Yeah.
You know how he gets. He's just friendly. And what pisses me off the most?
Yeah.
It's the wife that's normally protecting him.
Mm.
His wife is normally the one that's defending him, going, "Ah, you know how he is. You know when he drinks." Then I'm like, firstly, why has this body got a vest on at all points? His shirt is off. The vest is on. Now, once you see the vest, you must now start tucking, because No, so firstly, I think it's gross. I think there's no excuse. Mm. And I also think that just speaks to the truth of what type of human the Dalai Lama is. I want to be on his side. I want to be there for what he stands for. I want to be there for peace and for beauty.
But even Buddha is like, "Don't rub my tummy anymore."
Don't touch me.
You know?
Because now I don't know if you're wearing underwear underneath this thing. Are you wearing a nappy? Like, what are you wearing underneath this thing? Because any man who's too free at any point.
Yeah.
No.
At some stage, a TP will be erected.
Come on.
Pun unavoidable.
So sorry. You must remember, before anybody comes to me, this man looked the child in the child's face and said to the child, do you want to suck my tongue?
In fact, after kissing the boy initially, he's silent for a sec, almost like he's asking himself,
should I?
Do I shoot my shots? Am I the only one who saw that?
No.
I mean, he looked like he's asking himself that, you know, there's people, there's cameras, there's mics. Do I shoot my shot? Because will I see this boy again? That's what it looks like.
His new name is the Dalai Lama. The Dalai, because he Dalai's things he's not supposed to.
Or the Dalai Lamsa, because he's about the Lamsa, clearly.
No, I said the Dalai Lama must fall. Last check. The Dalai Lama must fall. Me and R. Kelly are on the same page in this way.
What, that, you see?
Yeah, R. Kelly's like, yeah, you see, I'm in jail. People are not playing my songs, but the Dalai Lama.
In fact, speaking of jail, it's been probably caught the country's imagination for the last 4 weeks.
Yes.
Thabo Bester arrived in town. I think they landed Thursday morning,
yeah.
Headline Syria.
Yes.
And I'm told that Nandipa is already in bloom. Apparently, he's already in bloom.
Yeah.
That's how fast they are going with that.
So they're pushing.
How have you been feeling about this Thabo Bester story?
Firstly, I think it's the most ridiculous thing that we've seen in years.
Yeah.
I think my favorite comment was the opening line of Kaya Tlanga's comment was, I don't think he's smart. I think he's brazen.
Yes.
Because I think a lot of people are like, this guy's a genius. Then I'm like, no, this guy's just got balls and he doesn't have a sense of consequence and believes he can get away with anything.
He's who he thinks he is.
Absolutely.
And if half of us used that positively,
yes,
we'd actually get far.
We would achieve amazing things, especially in a world where everybody's scared of the consequences.
There's a saying, you must have the balls and the confidence of a construction worker hitting on a girl he knows he has no chance with,
yes,
but he does it anyway.
Yes, yes. The bra whistling for the girl jumping, yes, out of a Range Rover.
He knows there's no,
yes,
chance.
But he still.
I'm going to shoot my shot. Not you, Dalai Lama. Not you.
Now, what makes this worse is we exist in a country where consequences are few and far between.
Yeah.
So you can get away with a lot of stuff here. You got a bit of money. Even if you're a bit good looking, you can get away with a lot of things here in South Africa. So it's wonderful for me to see some sort of repercussion. And hopefully that becomes like a thing for other brazen people. Oh, there's some crazy people. And I think COVID also put people in a headspace where now people are wanting to take more chances than ever. I've been broke enough to think about robbing a bank. I've been that broke. But then I think about jail.
Oh, yes.
And then I go, jail is for thin people.
Mm.
Because I'm a buffet in the jail. You know what I mean? I can't Thabo Bester that thing.
You're lunch and dinner.
100%. How am I going to escape? There were two bodies that were transported out in one tracksuit. What are we...
G4S were in Parliament this week, and obviously they were bumbling through it.
Thugs.
Like they bumbled through the whole thing, not being able to give answers. I don't know. Thabo Bester is what, 1.7 meters tall?
Yeah.
The body they found burnt in his cell is more than 20 centimeters taller, shorter. But nobody ever looked at that body and said,
but
Fred, surely they don't shrink.
Have you ever put Vors in the air fryer? Have you ever put Vors in the air fryer?
Do you think they looked at it like Vors?
I think the Vors shrinks a bit when it's heated to, and these are simple things. They look at the fat on the floor, guys. The coagulation is obviously, so what scares me is, and I'm glad that judge is being rough on those guys, but when I look in their eyes, it doesn't matter how much they bumble, I don't see any fear of consequence. I see guys that are going through a process that it looks like they already know what the outcome's going to be.
Oh, yes, yes.
They already know that...
We're sorted. We're protected.
So it doesn't matter what we say. We can bumble and fumble, but what you going to do?
In fact, another thing you can't make up is how three sorry-looking individuals are apparently behind this entire plan. They hardly look like they could arrange the opening of a tap, these guys, with all due respect, of course. But they planned this elaborate, we're going to burn this body and we're going to get a guy out of jail.
I believe that South Africa at the moment is just give the people what they want. And even if it doesn't look anything like what it's supposed to, just deny, deny, deny.
Yeah.
There were people saying, so did AKA's murderers stop at every KFC from Durban to Cape Town? Because how did they put on so much weight from the time, if you look at the first? Then we were all like, yeah, thank you for catching them. Becky, we love you, Becky. Then Becky is the David Blaine of police officers.
Yeah.
Smoke and mirrors, my friend. Smoke and mirrors. Then they just go, no, but there's the stuff you wanted. These guys are obviously...
But even with the AKA one, though, as soon as someone pointed it out and you slow down the video, the shooter runs like a girl.
The shooter looks like a girl.
Looks frame, like a
the
girl.
Body language.
The everything. Body, the palm, everything.
Now you're going to go and fetch Big Zulu there and said that was him all along. Come on. Get out of here, man.
Now, you have a mantra.
Yeah.
Happiness is a choice.
Yeah.
How did you get there?
Man, I think I got there because I was desperately unhappy. And the things that made me desperately unhappy were the things that kind of the world told me that I was supposed to have. Like
what?
Like I was...
Oh, because you were living with your mother and you're past 30.
Well, yes. And that's what you do when you go broke. There's no, I was like, mommy's asked me, I'm not ashamed. Ma, I'll come back. I'll come back now. It is what it is.
But you were in insurance sales.
Yes.
And you guys are meant to be making money.
And then 2008
came. How did it go wrong?
So I started in sales. We then opened a brokerage, a business partner and I.
You see, the problem is that you called it a brokerage.
Yes.
And then you went broke.
We went very broke. Very broke. And then 2008 came. And in 2008, I realized South Africans would rather pay for their DSTV than their life cover.
Mm.
They care more about entertaining their kids in the short term, protecting legacies in the long term. And we tried to diversify, did some business with some bad people, and went under in spectacular fashion. And that's where the mantra started, is because in my 20s, my happiness was linked to my bank account. When I had bucks, I was in a good mood. No bucks, bad mood. It was a very simple thing. Then I realized that A, I'm giving money too much power, and B, nobody's coming to make me happy. I must decide to be happy.
Mm.
It's nobody's responsibility. It's not my wife's responsibility. It's not my mom's responsibility. It's not my friend's responsibility. They can be catalysts. They can add to the happiness, but fundamentally, I've got to find my happiness where my feet are now, with my current debit order situation, with my overlapping stomach. I can't wait until, okay, I'm out of debt, or I've got a new house, or I'm in a new relationship, or I'm out of an old relationship, because everybody's vicarious, I'm going to be happy when? Then we don't have time. We don't have time to wait. Find your happiness now.
Or I'm saving because I want to spend this money when I'm 50. What if you don't make it to 50? What if you don't make it to 50? We're not saying be reckless with your money and your spending.
No, not at all.
But if you have a bottle of champagne, pop it today.
It's that saying of plan like you're going to live forever, but live like you're going to die tomorrow. It's that thing of there's no gift, there's no guarantee that tomorrow is coming. So dala what you must today, because everybody's worried about the destination. Then it's not. It's every day.
The journey must be a celebration.
And we're so focused on things that we forget to celebrate. And it happens to me all the time. I was on set last week, and I had this moment of taking a deep breath, looking around this amazing experience and going, this is what I'm working for. To be able to be part of this amazing world and do this magic of TV. It's not the money. The money comes and goes. You spend the money.
Yeah.
The only thing the money affords you is experiences, and to be present enough to go, this is what I'm working for. Not money. Blessing. Gift.
What set were you on last week?
I can't talk about it.
Jeez.
I can't talk, but I got some nice things. I can't talk about last week, but I can talk about what's out now.
Okay.
And what you can start seeing. So 23rd of April, Celebrity Game Night Season 4 is back.
That's a badass TV show. I love it. I'm hooked to sit and watch it with the kids. We even rerun it ourselves.
Thank you. It's in what world do I get to make TV as a comedian where I'm entertaining the kid, the granny, the uncle loves me as well, out of nowhere, the one that doesn't have children. It's entertaining, come on.
And the guests love it because we get paid.
Yes.
One of the very few shows on African TV that pay you to be a guest.
No. To be a guest on that show, they will collect you in a luxury vehicle, escort you.
And feed you alcohol. And send you back home.
Have you ever been in another set where somebody collects you with an umbrella when it's too hot from the car? Come on, Celebrity Game Night.
They have umbrellas?
The one.
There's a set with umbrellas?
There is.
Oh, wow.
But you came in an overcast day. I remember the day. The umbrellas were down.
Yeah, the umbrellas were down, but it was lovely being driven, fed alcohol, sent back home.
Treated nice. Treated right.
And paid.
South African Productions, take notes.
So you're working on something that you can't tell us about.
Yeah.
But when will we see it?
So you'll see the one I was working on last week, you'll probably see in October. I've got another cool one that should be launching in July.
Yeah.
But what's just dropped yesterday is the my new episode of Giving It Gears with Jason Goliath on Red Bull TV, which is I think like one of those shows that I just pinch myself all the time because it's like a thing that I just get to go and tick off bucket lists. This latest episode, I'm with the Drift brothers who I've been following for years. These are German boys that modified M4s. They're brothers and they drift and they compete and they make content. And I got to hang with them. So they were here in the country for M-Fest. We took advantage of that and got to shoot for a few days. And these are like colored guys. Like if El Dorado Park was in Germany, the same.
So they're from the elders of Germany.
They are the elders of Germany. Yeah. It was like my brothers from German mothers. The best. Just go and watch the episode. If you're into cars, drifting, humans, fun, action.
Where do we find that episode?
The episode is available for free on Red Bull TV. And Red Bull TV is not like a subscription service. You don't even need login details. You just go to Red Bull TV, click the link and watch it for free. It's lovely.
Speaking of TV, there's a new series on Showmax.
Yes.
It's called Adulting. It's about four gents basically living and loving in Joburg.
Yeah.
But it also stars... I don't know if you remember Kitty, we're from Generations. Played by Winnie and Jabba.
That woman lied to us, eh?
Why?
Because we expected our wives to be like that. To be
on some Yemi Baba.
My wife has never said Yemi Baba to her. Never Yemi Puti. Quit Baba. I've never received Baba. Baby, I'm sorry, I'm putting our business in the street. That woman made it look like...
Not even role playing, Sean said Yemi Baba to you.
No. I've never on record. Got a yebo baba.
You're built like a Zulu warrior, ready to go to war for King Shaka.
But I am dating. Remember the moment that we all said, why did Will Smith laugh before going to slap Chris Rock?
Oh, yes.
It's because we forget that in that moment, what Chris Rock said was hilarious. Then Will Smith turned his head and looked into G.I. Jane's eyes.
Yes. And G.I. Jane was like, is this all you're going to do?
My wife is cut from that G.I. Jane cloth,
yes,
my friend.
Yes, she is.
I'm scared of my wife. I'm afraid. Baby, you don't need to call me Baba. I'll call you my Baba.
Anyway, so Winnie, a.k.a. Kitty West.
The great wife, yeah.
She plays MEC of Arts, Beth.
Yes.
In Adulting.
Oh, yeah.
And she is loaded.
Uh-huh.
But she's also got a toy boy.
Okay.
And there's a scene. This is the part you can't make up. Because in my mind, I know how TV works.
Yes.
It's a character.
Yeah.
Kitwe was just a character. But for me, what blew my mind was seeing her in a bed with her toy boy.
Yes.
Her toy boy is wearing a bodysuit. You know how you clip at the bottom there by your nuts there?
Oh.
This dude is wearing his toy boy. He's wearing this bodysuit.
Have you ever worn one of those?
I've never.
A clip on there.
She's watching, so I can't confirm or not if I've worn her bodysuit.
Here's what it is.
Anyway, he's upside down, right? Going down on her. And she's lying in bed. Obviously, he's going down south.
Yeah.
And she's losing her mind.
Yes.
And then when, obviously, the angels start singing, her body starts vibrating. In fact, because you're from Elders, I'm going to use an example that makes sense to you.
Please.
You know when you have a Golf 1?
Yes.
And then you have, like, Rockford Fosgate sound at the back.
And everything
vibrates. And your rear number plate is going...
Yes. Yeah, I know the sound exactly.
She did that. And add the sounds also. So in my mind, I'm like, so Kitty had sex?
It's like you're describing... No, but it's like you're describing my mom. That's what I'm feeling like right now. What you're describing is watching somebody's mom have... Because that's where it's like... She's not supposed to...
She's not. The last time she had sex was when she had you.
No, and she doesn't vibrate unless the child is coming out. No. What is she vibrating for?
So in my mind, I'm like, why am I shocked? Kitwe was just a character. So why am I bothered that Kitwe is now this sugar mamu, the toy boy that goes down south and she loses it?
Firstly, good for her.
Uh-huh.
Firstly, good for her.
I like when you say good for her and then you swallow.
No, because I'm trying to be open-minded. I'm trying to be open-minded and go, you know, but mothers need sex too. And they need that upside-down vibrating your cuckoo sex. They don't need normal.
Exactly.
They need that acrobatic. Because imagine how sexy it is to be able to go, pa, and then unclip a man's bodysuit and then release... You know what I mean? This is a two-finger operation. It's a bar. You know what I mean? Because that's how you do it. How else would you release it?
I think only guys with experience know how to actually release it with one hand. Boys don't know how to release it with one hand.
Because also you've got to release and not have the shoot back.
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Because that's dangerous.
Exactly.
I'm just trying to get away from the scene. Because she shouldn't be doing the scene.
No, but she is.
I know that she's a character with a career, but
But listen, shout out to Chedza Pictures. I'm loving adulting. I think the casting is brilliant. Storyline, love it. And just we get to see the other side of Ketiwe.
You know, I don't think that South Africans appreciate how great South African content is becoming.
Oh, yes.
Under the context of the budgets that we're allowed.
Now that there are budgets.
No, but and even now that there are budgets, we still... So budget in South Africa is generally...
It's still rubbish.
No, it's generally... They've got one episode... International's budget to do a full season here, and that's considered budget, and that's no joke. So many of the shows you watch, they've got like I remember Strictly Come Dancing, their budget for the season was the same as the UK budget for one episode, and we're still making good stuff. So we got writers that are earning next to nothing,
yes,
that are still making, yes, good stuff. We got an, yep, industry that are not wealthy. We don't make, you on TV, you're not making bucks, but it's still coming through. So I just think that the talent is exceptional.
We had the same problem with SA's Got Talent.
Yes,
where our entire season was probably less than what each judge in the US or the UK were earning.
No doubt.
You know what I mean?
No doubt.
But we still had a kick-ass show and made it work.
Came through.
So shout out to all TV and movie makers in the country. You guys are making like magic out of nothing. Okay, yes, you do pay rubbish.
Yeah.
But you're making...
No, some of you are doing shit. Some of you are doing shit. You know yourself. You know yourself. Some of you are taking chances, barely rolling the dice with that SAB. Uh-huh. Stop it.
Finally, in the US, the National Recording Registry inducts music from Madonna, Mariah Carey, Queen Latifah, and Daddy Yankee. So the National Recording Registry pretty much preserves American history through recorded sound, and is supposed to reflect the nation's diverse culture.
Mm-hmm.
Now, for me, here is the clincher. Queen Latifah is the first female rapper to join the National Recording Registry with a debut album from 1989. When she was just 19 years old. Why in 2023 are we still talking about the first female to ever do anything in any country?
I'd rather want to talk about why we're still shocked that we're still having these conversations.
Oh, but then again, it is America.
No, 100%. Yeah. And I'm always trying to say to people, like, because you know how it is, you do something a little bit well and everybody's going, when are you moving to America?
Yeah.
And here's my honest, and I hate that I'm saying this on your thing because it's gonna be on me. If you want to feel black,
yeah,
go to America.
Sure.
You want to believe me, South Africa, we live so well. You want to feel black, go to America. Don't go to New York. Don't go to LA. Mm. Go anywhere out of any of the big metropolitan, yeah,
and
cities.
And don't go to Atlanta. It's not a reflection on America.
100%.
Yeah.
You are. I mean, I remember Robbie Collins telling me a story that he's on stage outside of one of the major towns, and literally somebody just from the audience, who's a full white audience, shouts, "Shut up, nigga."
Oh, wow.
Now, if you in South Africa,
yeah, and you try
to say "shut up" K-word,
yeah,
as a comedian, I don't have to take care of you. The audience is going to finish, yeah, you.
But I will come and
I will
come and contribute.
I will, no, 100%. But it's going to take me time to get you, because just the people around you,
yeah,
in the States, the show carried on. Nobody reprimanded the person. Nobody even looked at her funny. The audience was like, "Yeah, what she said." Then you go, no, South Africa is actually lovely. I can't even.
Do I want to live there? No, I don't.
No, yeah, no, I want to live here. And a very wealthy man described it to me when I said to him, "Why do you live here? You don't do business here." He said, "Because I know myself. I need first world things with a little bit of third world thinking."
Mm.
And I said, "What does that even mean?"
Sure.
He said to me, "If I lived in Australia and I got caught for speeding, I go to jail. I live in South Africa, I get caught for speeding. There's a young negotiation period. There's a young window period of luxury."
I don't even know why I'm laughing. I should be laughing.
No, because the more you think about it, the more you go, yes, we do need a little bit of third world thinking. It is what it is. I love this place.
And our cost of living is not as bad as in a lot of these countries.
No, we live well, man.
You can actually live on next to nothing in this country.
Which I think is the blessing and the curse. You, yeah, know, one of my favorite comics, Titi Chumia, said, I don't even think he realized how smart the thing is that he was, yeah, saying. He said, the major problem he has with South Africa is the fact that in our economy, one man can pay another man's salary with the money he has in his pocket.
Oh, yes.
And it's that wage disparity thing between haves and have-nots that is a hectic thing. But then when you come to the realities of life, you can now choose which side of that line do you want to live on. Mm. And I don't think there's an easier space to move above that line than in South Africa. Mm. I think if you put your head down and you work hard here, you can do things, but it's not easy.
So do you believe South Africa is still alive with possibility? Despite all that is happening, the load shedding, the crime, the assassinations,
But I want to say yes, because I think that we have to, but I think that that possibility, we look for it in the wrong places. Mm-hmm. I think that we live in a dream world. If you think the government is trying to make us a first world country, if you think politicians go to bed at night trying to think about how to reduce the gap between haves and have nots.
Or that they struggle to sleep at night.
Yeah, 100%. And if you think politicians are idiots,
yeah,
then already you've lost the battle. Mm. I think those are the smartest men in the room, and I think that we get fed what we need to be fed. And if you think about capitalism and the way third world financial ecosystems work, it's the easiest way is to make a handful of people super wealthy and they feed off of everybody else. So I believe that we've got a better chance of becoming just like most African states than getting closer to the first world. Then once you've accepted that, because I'm all about acceptance at the moment, you stop pretending things are not the way they are. Yeah. Accept, play the rules of the field. And once you've accepted that our ecosystem is going to divide even more haves and have nots, which side do I want to be on? And stop being emotional about it. I think that's when we win. Hope, I'm not sure.
There's a tweet I read, someone saying, I don't know why you guys keep making this noise about our education. It's not in the interest to have critical thinking educated youth.
I listened to, back in the day, there was a Brown 702. He'd just written a book. I wish I could remember his name.
Yep.
And he just done a study that said that matric South Africans are reading at a standard 6 or grade 8 level in Botswana compared, you know what I mean? So how does a grade 8? And then he said, when you understand that the DA and ANC, if you look at our two major parties, ANC, their statistics generally matric and below, people who vote ANC, DA is generally matric and above, why would you educate people if you knew that the second people are more educated, they are less likely to vote for your party? There's no incentive even to educate. So why would they bolster the education system? Why would it be improved? No. It's that thing of let the people eat cake. Just keep their mouths full and their heads empty and we'll be fine.
And 300 rand a month might just be the opium they need.
How sad is that, bro?
Yeah. Because the religion is not an opiate enough, so maybe let's throw in a couple of bucks a month.
How sad is that? Also, religion is not an opiate enough, needs to be a t-shirt.
I think I'm going to do that. So I'm a genius, Musne. That's also another
t-shirt. No, you're doing that one casually. That's a big line. That's a big statement. You just drop it casually and we're going to carry on. That's a big
My line. Dude, I'm being shouted at. Apparently, we're out of time.
No ways. We just started.
I know we just started. I don't know why they're doing this to me.
Come on.
Maybe it's because I'm black.
Ah.
Is it because I'm black?
Why is no one making eye contact?
If the host was white, would
look
you be
them.
Doing this?
Yes.
Look at them all looking at
us. Yeah, would have had at least 10 more minutes with Gareth Cliff now.
Exactly.
Cutting it off.
Who knows? Gareth would have said, we'll get more tape.
We'll fix it in post.
We'll get more tape. But me, I'm being told our time is up. My dude, where do we catch you doing what? Because you are busy. In fact, before you go, I have to ask you this question. Yes. You did breakfast at Kaya.
Oh, tragic.
But just as you guys were taking off, new management said, hold my beer.
If you're going to make a clip of this thing, if you're going to make a clip of anything I've said, make a clip of this.
Yes.
Make a clip of this. I'm on record. Greg Maluka, most genius radio person in the history of South African radio management.
Yeah, yeah.
Yes, there were flaws. There's flaws everywhere. You want flaws, go to any big institution. There are little cracks, little flaws. The Bra gets ambushed. And instead of dealing with what they say the problem is, they come in and change everything.
Everything that was working.
Everything that was not only working, but I think bolstering Kaya to be the station of the future.
Yes,
be the station that can play in all of these spaces that radio is struggling to play in. Because Greg is a damn genius.
In fact, Kaya was a leader in a lot of content that SA Radio is only making now.
Not only a leader in content, but I think the leader in content comes from the fact that they were the leader in seeing who they're actually talking to. The first radio station to acknowledge black middle class.
What else they need outside of radio?
No, but who's acknowledged the black middle class?
Yeah.
Who? Show me one platform that openly acknowledges that there were kids like you and me who had parents who worked a little bit hard to try and send us to a certain place to get us fashion things, that have an appetite for nice things that are still intrinsically African. There's nobody talking to those people. Then Greg came through with that as his target, which allows him to bring all of this beautiful content that nobody would have dared to think of, never mind do. Then you have the bureaucracy of capitalism coming in to go, no, somebody's got to be blamed, somebody's got to fall. You whisper in one or two people's ears, because a lot of people think that masses make decisions.
Yeah.
Decisions are made in boardrooms, my friend.
Sure.
You know that.
It's hardly a full room.
No.
Yeah.
No. It's one or two people, it's personal agendas, and I think Kaya's current situation is a result of acting on personal agendas instead of acting on business numbers,
three.
Business numbers and facts.
Come on.
And I look forward to the day Kaya actually admit that we need that man back. Because without him, you guys are rudderless right now.
They'll never.
And you will keep bringing in your consultants.
In fact, I hope you phone him and he says, "Futak!" That's the only thing I'm going to say. I'll be presses you here. You know yourself, I'll be presses you here and goes, "Futak! You bloody fool." Damn it, it makes me mad. That whole Kaya situation made me angry. Mm-hmm. I think I was, myself, David O'Sullivan, Skumba to a degree, even collateral damage. You know what I mean? There was great thinking, great foresight, great insight. And just as it was taking off, as this vision was coming to fruition, somebody made a bad decision.
I wouldn't be surprised if we're told the numbers are down in terms of revenue. I wouldn't be surprised at all.
I'm sure the numbers are down.
Yeah.
Who listens to
that? I wouldn't be surprised that the numbers are down.
Who's listening? Who's listening? I don't know anybody that's listening. That's my problem right now. Why? Because they don't know who they're talking to. And before, the reason people listened...
It was intentional.
They were on purpose.
You knew you were being targeted.
They were on purpose. Yeah. So now you've got I don't know what's happening. But it's terrible. It's archaic. And I wish the presenters... Tibos, I wish you luck, my bra.
On that note, I think we are done.
Yeah, I think I'm done in radio as well. On that note, I feel like...
We've had our best tea.
Got it off our chest. Yeah, I feel better.
My dude, you kick butt at everything you do. And that's what I hate and love about you. Because, you know, there's something to hate about the guy who gets everything he does right. But there's also something to love about someone like you who says, "Oh, you want me to fly a plane? Okay, yeah, step aside. Let me fly the plane." You are that guy. And you will fly the plane. That's what I hate about you.
I'm born with that. How hard could it be, Gene? And it's a problem. That way I look at something and go, if you can do it, then I could probably
What's so special about you that I can't do it?
And I do that in the context of being a big person.
Yes.
Because my worst videos is seeing fat people flop online. I'm always like, you're letting all of us down. You know when you see a fat person behind a boat and there's a parachute? I'm like, what are you doing there? No! So you also got to know yourself. And within the context of that, I'm not doing foolish things, but I do get to do some ridiculousness. And I learned from you, bruh. I've been, a fan of yours from YFM days.
Yeah.
I remember being groggy and bubbleless at Varsity and them saying, fresh, they used to call because I was this big guy with a deep voice.
Yeah, and a big head.
That's how influential you've been in my life for more than 20 years.
Jeez, bro.
And I just want to salute not only the because I think consistency is the greatest thing that you can pull off in this industry.
Mm.
And you've been consistently the big dog.
Mm.
I mean, I once teased you on stage and said that, even 10-year-old Fresh looked 40 because those are the type of decisions that you make. You always just seem to make adult, grown, hard man decisions.
Yeah.
And I think that's exactly what we need in this time. So thank you for being a light, bro. And thank you for having that Midas touch and creating gold and for having me on your platform. You are wonderful. You really are.
Ladies and gentlemen, my poet, Mbongi, Jason Goliath, is about to leave the building. Find him everywhere. He is everywhere. Jason Goliath. Wow, what a week. Thank you for joining us.
This is...
Wow!
What a week.
What a week. Tech.
Tech.
His nickname is a robot with soul. Whether that's got to do with his moves on or off the dance floor, we're not sure. But we do know that is he's got an intriguing brain. And that's why we'd like to give a wow welcome to our tech feature guest, Langa Zulu.
Thank you. Thank you, Big Dog.
Now, thanks for joining us.
Really appreciate this, yeah.
Now, his title, you've got quite a title and a half that I am looking for. Head of Business Strategy at Algo Rocks, MD at Algorithm Lab, co-founder at Algo at Work Robotics Academy. What does it all mean? Who are you? What do you do? Who sent you?
Goodness, thank you so much once again. All of that means very little because essentially, if you're building products, you're building your business, your companies, your movement, you're always, moving from business to content to tech.
Sure.
Essentially. But what it means to me is, and life with purpose, and ensuring that we can unlock economic opportunities for ourselves as young people, and ensuring that we can develop the solutions to the problems that we see in our society. So essentially, that's what it means to me.
So in simple English, what on earth do you do?
So essentially what we do is we educate about technology.
Doesn't you run a school?
Specifically at the academy.
Okay.
So we groom talent, we coach talent from as young as 9 years old. You know, introducing children to software engineering, to electronics, to product development, you know, to AI, artificial intelligence.
Sure.
And prototyping, building of products, whether it's cell phones, whether it's, you know, self-driving cars and that kind of stuff.
Now, you say when you were a kid, I mean, you grew up loving playing games like Super Mario and Contra.
Yeah.
How did you end up here?
I wouldn't really. I think it's obviously it's but a calling. I'd like to believe. But I think I've always have you know, had that love and passion for technology from the days of Robocop, Terminator, for example.
Mm-hmm.
But I think closer, you know, as I grew up, you know, the passion, you know, to create solutions, I think has you know, was there. And obviously teaming up with my brothers that I started the movement with.
Okay.
That is when we realized that actually the easiest gateway is technology, because there's no, you know, barriers, you know, and rules. No, you shouldn't do this. You shouldn't do that kind of stuff. So essentially, if you can code and build the software, you can the next day launch a product. And that's what we did.
You have an academy.
Yeah.
What do you guys teach there? How do I become a part of this academy?
So what we teach is the fundamentals and the first principles of essentially developing solutions.
Okay.
And solutions, by solutions we mean it's essentially anything. It could be, as I was saying, self-driving car, a smart house. It could be anything. But what we essentially, the culture that we build and we instill in the trainees and the talent, yeah, is essentially the culture of realizing the problems that you have in your society.
Okay.
And saying, what is it that I can do with the skills that I have, which you then attain at the academy, software engineering, coding, the aspect of robotics, we give you electronic sensors, you know, and then you start to put together and design these solutions, these robots, essentially as solutions for our society. And that is where you then start to unlock the aspect of economic, you know, empowerment, because through that, you can then start to look at the IP, licensing it, putting it to the market and selling it and things like that.
So before we even talk further about your academy and have parents now wanting to enroll their kids, are you accredited? How do we know that if I go to this academy, I'm getting value for money?
Yeah.
It's not a fly by night.
Yeah.
And I'm not throwing my money down the toilet.
Yeah. So it's been a long journey, Big Dog, you know, because imagine we're starting at 2014, 2015, where there's no accreditation, there's no framework.
Yeah.
So we had to essentially develop the framework for robotics curriculum in South Africa, working with schools. So, but, you know, as we grew, the aspect of partnerships, collaboration has been key to us. You know, our trainers are certified through the partnerships that we have, local and international partnerships that we have. For example, one of the companies that we partner with. So that is essentially what gets us, you know, the accreditation that we need, but also most importantly, the resources from industry, as well, from the technology industry, the robotics industry. That has been also quite key to us to ensure that our product is a product with quality and ensure that it's a product that people can identify with.
Okay, so if I enroll my child or myself to Algo At Work Robotics Academy, I'm getting value for money.
That is correct.
It's accredited. No one's going to turn around and say, sorry, we don't know who these people are.
Definitely not, Big Dog. And
you know, I ask this again because a lot of parents have thrown money into careers kids have wanted to get into.
Yeah.
And tomorrow, jiggy, we don't know this academy, they're not accredited, your money's gone.
I see. So I think you know, well, what is interesting, it's quite an interesting you know, conversation, because there's a revolution that is as ongoing, fourth industrial revolution. So what is happening is, because the DNA is to say we want the talent to be entrepreneurs. Mm. We want them to launch this product into the market. So that is essentially the biggest value that a parent gets, or rather the talent. So that is where essentially we focus on. We don't necessarily focus largely on certificates, even though they do get the certificates, of course, of participation in the courses that they do, which is a number of programs. But what is important for us is the exposure, industry exposure, the networking element, the raising of funds. So, for example, our talent has, you know, just raised 400,000 rand to continue developing their prototypes and launch these products into the market. So essentially, that's where it's at, and we do that through the collaborations with our stakeholders.
In fact, I was going to say, who are some of your stakeholders, the collaborations you speak of, the partnerships you speak of? For instance, who is Chieta? Who are SMG?
So Chieta is a chemicals industry education authority in South Africa. So it's a chemicals industry CETA. So yeah, they just granted us, I think, just less than a million to ensure that we can, you know, open up access to children in rural areas, rural schools. So we're running robotics programs and AI programs with grade 10s to 12. We work with Moses Kotane Institute, which is a research and development agency under KZN government, for example. That is, they gave us the seed funding so that we can ensure that we can launch some of our prototypes and our robots into the market. That is coming up. SMG, you know, slash BMW, Umhlanga, they give us also the support as well, you know, through various means, because we look at, you know, different resources that we need within the academy. So it's quite expensive to have all these sensors, shipping them from China, for example, so that the kids can start building the stuff that they build. So those are some of our stakeholders and partners.
What are some of the solutions your students have provided for which community?
It's crazy. The stuff that they're working on. I think first time when we, you know, brought this to the public, people didn't believe that 10-year-olds can start to develop insane solutions. So one who's Alex Dodd, who's one of our top junior engineers, is busy working on a conveyor belt prototype for the recycling industry. So it's essentially going to sort out plastics, my color and my time. Nice. That is what he's working on. And he raised, I think he's raised about 50,000 rand to 200,000 rand so far through MTN Foundation, through Moses Kotane Institute. Juliana Wright is one of our other top talents. She worked on smart social distancing classes during COVID. We've got Adelaide, who is working on a smart transporter case for organs. For the medical industry. So those are some of the prototypes that they're working on, which are coming out to the market over the next 2 to 3 years.
What do you say to people who are worried about the rate of automation? In fact, one of the videos that's gone viral over the last week is a McDonald's store in the US that's fully automated.
Yeah.
And already people, you know, including unions, are saying, but what of our jobs? What of the people?
Yeah. I think revolution is always, this is the fourth, right? So those are the first, the second, you know. So I think evolution is always going to happen. I think we need to embrace change as people, because this is an opportunity to reconfigure ourselves. Essentially, who are we? What is our purpose on earth?
And maybe to reskill ourselves and repurpose ourselves.
Exactly, and adapt to the new environment. So that's what it's about. It's the change is always going to be there. It's inevitable. So yeah, let's embrace change.
Now, you know, you and your ilk often talk about smart events. And I'd like to think a smart event is not a room full of doctors and engineers and lawyers. What on earth is a smart event?
Essentially, I think obviously that there's sometimes it is the word smart is often abused. Smart car, smart house, smart this, smart that, you know. Essentially, it's everything that you think is smart to you.
Yeah.
But I think to us in the industry, essentially means using technologies to, you know, to enhance the experiences for your attendees. For example, maybe you can start to use apps for people to check in. You can, you know, you can start to pick up data,
making your life easier.
Exactly. You know, enhancing and optimizing. So that's actually that's what at the heart of the smart movement.
And earlier on, you mentioned some of the kids who are innovators within the robotic space.
Yeah.
Who are some of the other names we need to remember one day?
You're getting me into trouble, but right now we're working with a special cohort. We're calling them the Algoid Work Mafia.
Yeah.
It's a group of four junior engineers. They're about ages of 15.
Yeah.
So there's Adelaide Hendricks, there's Juliana Wright, there's Alex Dodd, Okay, I'm forgetting the other one. Oh, goodness. Mm. So that's the special group.
I'm sure there's a robot to help you with that. If not, someone would work on it.
It's Jivesh. It's Jivesh. I'm not. Please don't. It's Jivesh. So they are bringing the products, you know, over the next year or two through the support that we're getting from Moses Kotane Institute. So, yeah, those are the names to look out for.
Mm-hmm. Now, early on, just so that we, like I said, I keep asking about this because it's important.
Yeah.
Accreditation. Am I in safe hands coming to a robotics academy?
Definitely you are. I think, and the results speak for themselves. For example, if people visit our website, visit our YouTube, I'll go to Work Robotics Academy, you start to see the stuff that our talent is working on and building. Yeah. You know, when they pitch, for example, because they attend industry conferences, they attend hackathons, and that kind of stuff. And we don't treat them like kids, Big Dog. So we send them to industry conferences, and they participate with industry professionals and side business, that kind of stuff. Mm. They work with professors, you know, in those engagements. Mm. So essentially that's what it's about. It's a revolution. That's what it means. So it's uncomfortable. But we are working closely at hand to working with CETAS to ensure that, you know, some of the other aspect, we can ensure that we can formalize them and put them through into the mainstream education market.
So where do I find Algo at Work Robotics Academy?
You can visit our YouTube. We've essentially have got free courses on our YouTube or through our website, Algo at Work Robotics Academy. Algo at Work Robotics Academy. And you can also visit our website, algo@workroboticsacademy.com. You can also check out our LinkedIn. We're quite active on LinkedIn as well, Algo at Work Robotics Academy. So that's essentially where you can find us. But we're based in Durban as well as here in Joburg.
Brother man, the revolution, unfortunately, like you said, will not be comfortable. There'll be a lot of discomfort. There'll be a lot of unfortunate collateral damage. You know, sometimes
always will be casualties.
There will always be casualties, yeah. Unfortunately. But yeah. You know, we can either be ready for the revolution, or we can watch it happen around us and past us. So I'm hoping people will go to Algo at Work Robotics Academy.
Yeah.
Read up about it. See if it's your cup of coffee. If your kids are interested in robotics, coding, etc., then this is your man.
Thank you so much, Peter. I really appreciate it. And yeah, amazing work. Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Ladies and gentlemen, Langa, the human robot Zulu, is about to leave the building.
This is... Wow! What a week.
What a week. Politics.
Welcome to Wow, What a Week, part of the Africa Podcast Network. Reach us at www.africapodcastnetwork.com. Hashtag... Politrix. We gave him a title last week and thought to change it for a bit of variety. However, all of you expressed a liking to it, so unlike government, we listen. Please welcome back our Minister of Interpretation, Botsang Modimowame Muilwa.
Good morning, Vresh, and good morning to the viewers and the listeners and the followers.
Brother man, a lot of people don't know this, but you are a practicing Buddhist.
Yes.
The Dalai Lama is in the news. How are you feeling about what's happening with the Dalai Lama?
Did we have to start the political show with religion?
Religion is politics. Asking a child if they like to suck your tongue is political.
Look, I've been a practicing Buddhist since 1998, actually.
What happened in 98 that you decided that I will assume I'm done with Christianity?
I've stated before on this platform, I'm a son of a Lutheran pastor.
Sure.
I grew up in a Christian family. But I questioned a lot of things in church that got me into trouble with both elders of the church, Christian church, as well as my own parents. But funny enough, I was looking for a home. I was looking for a spiritual and religious home. And Christianity was not cutting it for me. There's nothing wrong with it, but it was not cutting it for me as a person. And I went to study. I went to do a fact-finding mission. I nearly became a Muslim. I couldn't agree with one or two things, or I couldn't cope with them. You know, one of them is consumption of alcohol. I was not going to ditch my wine for any religion. But nonetheless, I still wanted a religion or a spiritual path that will allow me to continue to be practicing an African customs and cultures and all that.
Yes.
And I'd found a balance in Buddhism, you know, and I don't regard it as religion. It's a way of life. It's a spiritual lifestyle, and I found comfort in that. Mm-hmm. But there were a lot of other things that could have led me to that. For example, being a martial artist, you know, practicing some of the cultures of the Asian culture had an influence in that.
Sure.
But with the story of His Holiness, the Dalai Lama the 14th, it's an unfortunate situation that has happened. I've actually had avoided to get into, you know, debates and discussions regarding what actually transpired.
Why?
Because people were going to sit and think that I am defending the Dalai Lama. Mm. But also, I try by all means in my life to avoid entering into religious debates.
Sure.
If there's two wars in the world that have been fought for the longest time, they are based on religion, most of that. But you have put me on the spot right now.
So, but can we agree, though, that don't ask a child if they like to suck your tongue?
Well, we should agree on that. But you see, what happened? let's discuss what happened. And it was not for the first time. I think this was captured in the international media. Mm. So it blew out focus. There is a Tibetan culture mm-hmm. of practice that happens in Tibet mm. where, you know, South African youth, when they play with you, they tease you, they normally do what they call spouting, like, okay. You know, it's teasing and playing.
True.
In a Tibetan culture, there's a culture and practice in Tibet where they actually stick out their tongue.
No, that I'm aware of. Yes. And also touching of foreheads.
Exactly.
And sticking out your tongue.
Exactly.
But you can't ask a child who's not a Tibetan, do you want to suck my tongue?
Well, His Excellency, His Holiness, was very quick to apologize for that. He actually said it in his mouth.
Is it good enough?
What else can you do when you do wrong? And this is one thing I learned from Nelson Mandela. When you do wrong, the most important thing in life and the Buddhist culture is first to admit that you have done wrong. You know, that's the first part. It's the most pivotal part. After you have admitted that you have done something wrong, then to go and apologize or do corrective measures.
Okay.
You know, corrective measures may be to go on a fast, you know, any other manner that you may deem fit and possible. But what more can a human being do despite coming out and saying, for me, uttering those words, whether it was jokingly or I was serious, it is wrong and I sincerely withdraw and apologize. What more can you do that you show remorse? You didn't waste time. You didn't try to defend it before. But I think the Tibetan spiritual leader did the right thing by withdrawing, by apologizing. And I think what the Buddhists, you know, could do from Tibet is to try and educate people more and talk more on what is this thing. Because we have seen now many more pictures and videos of the Tibetan people or the Buddhists, you know, sticking their tongue out, but obviously not asking people to suck their tongue,
yes.
or to kiss them or what. I think it was an unfortunate situation that they should put behind them and we move forward,
sure.
You know, as the world community.
Let's move to coalition governments. Because a lot of us doomsayers like looking at the municipalities that are not working out. You know, whether it's Mekuruleni, whether Tshwane or Jozi. And then we turn around and say, shock and horror, that means we are bad at coalitions. But in this country, there's at least another 40 coalition governments that are working.
Absolutely. Look, in this continent, in this world, and we have had a coalition government, although it was led by the ANC, the majority party. Yeah. But when you look at the structure of the government of national unity that moved us from transition from apartheid to what, there was a multi-party kind of democracy and process. But the practice in the world, what South Africa should do, and I think we should start being realistic regarding coalition governments now. If we do not regulate the formation of coalition governments, because reality has hit home. It is still at infancy stages now.
But we're going there.
But we are getting there. Yeah. I don't worry much about provincial or regional government, but I'm worried about the local where service delivery is based. Then the national government where the country must be governed. Imagine if what is happening in Tshwane and Ekurhuleni and Joburg happens at a national level, you know, and it will be chaos in the country where security may be compromised, you know, budget may be misappropriated or misused. So we should actually, at the moment, the IEC, as well as the legislature, the parliament, they should be now talking, those committees regarding, you know, electoral processes, they should start looking at coming up with a bill, which may take long, but they may come with simple regulations that actually compels the coalition partners to conduct themselves in a certain manner or certain way for the duration of the coalition government in that particular metro or city or what. If we don't come out with regulations, and I can tell you, in countries like Israel, India, Pakistan, and Germany, even for example, which are big democracies, they have coalition government, but they've got regulations that regulate the coalition partners to say, this is how we're going to conduct themselves. Let me use an example of Ekurhuleni.
So, for instance, you can't hold us hostage.
They're holding us as citizens hostage, actually. Yeah. And the government has a responsibility, or the electoral commission has a responsibility, to protect us as voters and citizens. Look at what happened at Ekurhuleni. They agree. Five members of the EFF are MMCs, five members of the ANC. Then the ANC members, because of their internal squabbles, they protest and they don't show up to take up their position. If there was an electoral mandate or regulation or rule that says once we've agreed on this and it has been signed by all the concerned parties who are authorized to sign it, this is what you will do. And then don't stop there. You must come with the repercussions. If you do not conduct yourself in a manner, maybe they should say, for example, the third party will take over those seats if the first party doesn't show up. But something has to be done. We can't operate in a vacuum. Tshwane had a mayor 2 weeks now. Now they are fighting to remove the speaker. Joburg, the people in Joburg, the Patriotic Alliance, played a very pivotal role in putting the mayor of Tshwane, of Jozi, into the machine.
Yeah.
The PA has come up and said, you know what, this guy is embarrassing us. Let him go. You understand? But look at the strategic move. Gayton McKenzie, the president of the Patriotic Alliance, is vacating, if you remember our vacation, is vacating his position voluntarily in the Karoo municipality. And the Patriotic Alliance is calling for the mayor of Joburg that comes from a minority party, one seat or two seats, just like the PA, to move. It may be a move to bring Gayton McKenzie to be the mayor of Joburg. It may be a carrot they are going to dangle in front of the ANC, DA, and EFF to say, we have sorted out the Karoo. We are a living example. We are here to come and clean up the mess in Joburg. We should not be surprised when we see that happening. But again, as in conclusion to this, unless you have another point, we need to regulate these coalitions. We can't operate in a vacuum. We can't operate like we are playing Mickey Mouse games with the lives and residents of these big metros. And now service delivery is suffering because we literally do not have government. Again, another thing. I was thinking, why should I continue paying my rates and taxes when those that are earning salaries through my rates and taxes and are supposed to render a service, they're not doing their job. They're not doing their job. They are not there. We don't have cancer.
They're playing politics and not delivering.
Exactly. They're playing politics, not delivering. And we are paying rates and taxes in order to receive services. Yes, some services may be happening, but these people are earning salaries for doing what?
Sure.
For being on and off, you know, like an indicator of the vehicle. Sometimes you are on, sometimes you are off. And by the way, an indicator of the vehicle, when it's on and off, is when it's functioning. When it's quiet and dark, then it's not working.
Unless you're a BMW driver and you never use your indicator, so we don't even know if it works or not. We must guess if you're on a 10 or not.
I don't know. That BMW will not like that comment.
No, but BMW know that their drivers never indicate. In fact, our politics is like following a BMW driver. You don't know if they're turning. Are they going left? Are they going right? Are they going to turn? Are they going to drive faster than you? Are they going to come pull up behind you and flash the lights?
Look, the country is no longer on autopilot. At some stage, Julius Malema said the country is on autopilot. I think we are worse now. We don't know whether this jet is going down. And on all fronts, in crime, in administration, in finance, everything is going down here.
But you know what? With all the issues we're dealing with, all the challenges we're dealing with, are we not being too doomsday-y in our thinking things are going to collapse? There's going to be a total blackout. There are war zones and life carries on.
Look, I don't think there will be an absolute collapse.
Yeah.
I don't think so.
I don't believe so.
I think we are just a paranoid nation. We are used to comfort.
Are we drama queens?
We are more like Americans. We are drama queens. Look at how the country for 2 weeks came to a complete standstill and halt for one escapee from prison with a girlfriend. And that was the focus of the country. Major things happened.
And the people in the Northwest, we haven't had water for more than 10 years.
Exactly.
Life goes on.
Exactly. You understand? So major, major things happened in this week that we are covering that people, if they're going to hear about what is happening this week, they'll get a shock of their life because us as, you know, drama queens and kings, we focused on one little thing that excited. It's not little, it may be bigger than what we're expecting. But again, I don't think there'll be a total collapse. There are challenges. If they are not nipped at a moment,
they must still be dealt with.
They must still be dealt with. Yeah. If we don't deal with these issues as a nation at a moment, we may find ourselves in trouble.
Let's talk about the Al Jazeera Gold Mafia documentary. A couple of South African banks have been mentioned, implicated. Let's talk about that.
That didn't come as a surprise to me. And I'll tell you why. Because a lot of South Africans were involved. If you look at that documentary, there are South Africans involved. And Zimbabwe, our neighbor, which is relying on us economically, was at the center of this gold.
So for those who know nothing about this Gold Mafia documentary, what is it about, in a nutshell?
Well, in a nutshell, Al Jazeera has, for quite a number of years, followed people who are actually mining and selling gold internationally, illegally, not for following the proper channels. Mm-hmm. You know, like, you know, the old story of what they used to call black diamonds in West Africa.
Yeah.
I will compare it to that. It may not be black gold, but it's gold that was mined, you know, and packaged and stamped and authorized illegally. And it uses what they call the black market to get into the hands of people who are actually trading in gold. And this, unfortunately, again, mainly happened in United Arab Emirates. You know, Dubai was on the pitch again and all this. So this is what Al Jazeera exposed. But the expose came in a sense that there are key people in the banking sector, in the mining industry, in the international forex trading center who are involved in this. Because we should also recall that besides the US dollar, a gold in many countries is a trading commodity.
Sure.
You can pay your debts, you can purchase with gold, you can exchange gold for money and things like that. So that was the whole expose about this thing. But why it impacts on us, another major thing that has happened, and South Africans another way. Two of our major banks, again, fresh. It was me on one platform in 2017 with my then former colleague, Tsepo Kadima, who exposed to this country and this world that four South African major banks were involved in conniving with 13 international banks. You know, Absa, FNB, Nedbank, and Standard Bank were involved in conniving. Our local banks connived with 13 international banks from the US, Germany, Switzerland, and so forth to devalue the national currency. I had said in 2017, in a normal country, that's treasonous.
Sure.
Those bank CEOs and executives and who were involved in that world should have been charged for treason. Our rent is
thrown in jail.
And I said, go to jail. Maria Ramos, who was then the CEO or chairperson of Absa, stood up and said, sorry, we did it, we apologize. And they got away with it, slap on the wrist, fine of $25 million, I mean rent, which is the maximum amount that they could be fined. But at a moment, again, an international two banks, Standard Bank and Absa, are back in the picture to say they are involved into this whole gold saga that is actually illegal and very risky. People's lives are being threatened at the moment regarding that whole gold mafia process. I want to open my eyes very wide and my ears and watch how is the Reserve Bank going to deal with this matter, because we've had an experience already in a different manner, but they have been mentioned. We shouldn't run into, you know, throwing stones already now and accuse them of having have committed a financial international transaction crime. We shouldn't do that. But the fact that they are being mentioned and is going to make some of us to open our eyes very wide and follow
it's a matter of concern.
It's a matter of concern. Then our banks, every time there's international money laundering, there's international fake transactions and run transactions, our major banks are involved into this. And as a nation, we shouldn't let such to happen. I want to see how Kas Kuvadia is going to come out now and explain what is happening. But we know in South Africa, when you are caught in a corner, you'll be even like G4S. We'll say, we'll come back with the answer. This is still under investigation. That's the best way to can get out of trouble in this country. We investigate perpetually.
Sure.
And you get away. The case dies its natural death while you are still investigating.
In fact, since you've taken us here, G4S finally showed up in Parliament a week later, having given them a middle finger before, saying you must subpoena us. And, you know, obviously portfolio committee members not impressed. They feel that you've told us nothing. You've told us nothing we haven't read about in mainstream media. And you want us to believe that these three pathetic-looking people pulled off this elaborate heist. What are your thoughts about this?
I like the way you put it, that actually what they told Parliament, it's actually what Parliament knew from the social media or any other media platform. They didn't say anything. I had found the G4S leadership that went to Parliament to be very arrogant and evasive as well. You know, they were arrogant from the beginning. They continued in Parliament. They answered questions, but they actually said nothing. They were puffing air. They said what we knew.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of the MPs who's a former NPA officer, Brayton Bach, who's a MD of MP, you could see that that's a former attorney or prosecutor asking questions. She actually filmed at the way they were responding to this. And when she asked how many people were on duty that night, it was 23 people. And out of the 23 people, only three were charged and dismissed. One of them who was the supervisor, superintendent that evening. Now, again, people will say we are pulling race into this thing. Only three black men were charged and chased and fired from their job regarding this whole thing. Three. And when did it happen? It happened after the media and the public outcry. And they basically put it on issues of you didn't follow procedure. You know, like at work when you do wrong, you didn't follow procedure. Therefore, they are not giving us the bigger picture of how this whole thing was masterminded.
It was elaborate.
Exactly. Now we are going to remember they also denied until last week. G4S was still denying that Bester is the person who died in there, despite, you know, the medical reports. But we are going to rely on courts. Something very crucial happened on the day these two fugitives were brought into the country. And this is also critical. The former justice, Edwin Cameron, mm-hmm. who is the presiding officer or the chair of the Justice Commission, came out and spoke now, you know, for the first time after this, and said even when they investigated this case, when it was exposed and reported before October last year, there were questions that G4S did not answer, and that could have helped them at that time to can resolve this thing. It was very clear they could have picked it up at that time that Thabo Bester is no longer in his cell, and actually he was aided to get out of the cell. But you know what is scary? What is scary is, Fresh, Thabo Bester was sent to prison for rape and murder, two of our highest crimes in this country. And you find people, normal people, whether in or outside the country, conniving with that particular person. It should be worrying as a nation. Why would you do that? But the other part is, and this is the
truth. It's simple. Every man and woman has a price.
Well, how far can a price go? Let's say they were bought. You know, you should have bought at least 100 people here. So he must have been loaded with hell loads of money to can pull this.
You can buy an assassin for 1,000 rand.
Now let's look at, let's flip the coin.
Yeah.
Let's not talk about those corrupt government officials and accomplices who were bought. Let's look at the victims or families of victims that were raped and murdered by Thabo Bester. Okay? And we look at the arresting officials at that time when he was charged and prosecuted in 2011, 2012. And we look at the media that knew him. He was a Facebook rapist. Facebook is a media platform. Now, you want to tell me that all the people who are on Facebook, who are in the media, who are in the news, the arresting officials, the normal, not bribed warders who saw that video of Thabo Bester making rounds as way back as, you know, April or whenever was it, in 2022, addressing an international conference or seminar. You want to tell me that no family member,
nobody picked it up.
Nobody said, but this face looks familiar.
Not one person picked it up.
It's impossible that that could have happened. It's very scary even, you know, I know how policemen work. Once they have achieved such a big case, it's an achievement for them. And then let's say the policeman does not watch social media, but families of the victims. And nobody said anything until somebody, you know, miraculously took a photo of them at Woolies.
Because someone has nice skin.
Yeah, exactly. You understand? So again, I don't want to believe the nice skin thing, but there's quite a number of high-profile people who are involved into this process, and it's going to start...
You believe so?
I strongly believe so. Yeah. I've communicated with quite a few people, and one of the people that I spoke to is somebody who is in the medical industry, who has very close ties with Dr. Panzi's, you know, friends and family and all that. And when you hear the names of the people that have been mentioned into this high profile, so I started doing my own profile of what has happened. You must look at the people who were on the A-list of those conferences.
Mm.
And it was not only Dr. Nandipa's conference. There was also Dr. Panzi conference or workshop or seminar. And it's the same bunch of people that were going around that cycle, supporting each other, black women educated, supporting each other, doing things together. Trust me, the nation is still going to see a lot in this. Mm. I don't think it's those three waters. No, they were involved. You know, today or tomorrow, we are going to see who's that guy who fiddled with the electronics, the cameras, and what.
Yes, yes.
Those are low-hanging fruits. Mm. You know, somebody must have been somewhere commanding this whole thing. And I think this is much more on money laundering and human or woman trafficking. I think this, for me, Tabo Dester is a rapist and a fraudster and a murderer. Now, you want to deal with money and selling women, sending them to Dubai, and they are beautiful, educated, and in businesses. Who's your best bet?
Mm.
Is the greatest rapist that has led beautiful women into his corner. So you will go and hire that person, pump money on that person to can go and focus on bringing the beautiful ones, the educated ones, those who are vulnerable and those who want to live in the limelight and who need money. I don't think this was a very simple thing that had to do with Tabo Dester escaping from prison. And again, we shouldn't put a blind eye that Tabo Dester at some stage, you know, I laughed because I used to do that as a photographer and a youngster. He was a beauty queen, beauty pageant organizer. So his relationship with beautiful women did not start now. Did not start with Dr. Nandipa. It started very, you know, years, many years ago. That's one element. The second element also is, you look at all these women who are being implicated, mentioned. They are all well-off people. They are people who are educated.
We assume they're well-off.
Well-off in a sense that they are not poor.
Mm.
You know, in a sense, they are not rich, but they are not poor. They now had to be rich and come into the A-list level of who's who in the money in South Africa. And again, money, greed is the root of all evils in this whole process. But I hope one of the peoples who are involved in this is going to stand up and sing.
Do you think Dr. Nandipa will sing, maybe be a state witness, serve a couple of years and walk away into the sunset?
If I was Dr. Nandipa's legal advisor or family member, she has two options. She goes to jail for a very long time, and the state has already said there may be other charges that are going to be added. I would actually choose, instead of going to jail for 15, 20 years and ruin my life permanently, I'll start singing, I'll start talking. You know, it's not the apartheid era, Mzabalazo now. I'll be an impimpi. I'll tell the truth. You will risk that you are being going to be killed by those people. Mm. But I'll deal with that after. When you go to jail, she's young. She's got kids. She still has a career that she has an opportunity to can rebuild.
Mm.
We can't take away that from her. I will tell the truth. I will stand up and tell the truth. If heads roll, let heads roll. And I don't believe in state protection. But again, we have heard what Minister Bheki tell him when they were deported back in South Africa, what he had said, to say Dr. Nandipa cooperated with the police, Interpol, and authorities in Tanzania.
Mm.
That's a step ahead. So let's hope she will continue cooperating.
In fact, let's talk border treaties, immigration, extradition, deportation, because those are some of the words that have been thrown around, given how easy it was for us to get them back here. Yeah. And in fact, other people are saying, if it was so easy to get them back here, why is Bushiri not here? Why are the Guptas not here? And I mean, you've done extensive work in border management, border legislation.
Take us through that. I hear you fresh, and the media and the public are saying, but why is it now difficult to extradite Bushiri and the Guptas and all other people that we want in the country? It is not that easy. In this case, it's a totally different dimension. Mm-hmm. There's a whole difference between an extradition. That's when a country requests another one to come and face trial, to come and face prosecution and charges in a country. There's a whole process regarding that. It also depends if both nations have an extradition agreement. And there's countries like, for example, Botswana has a capital punishment. And a lot of countries which are against capital punishment would hesitate to can extradite somebody to the Republic of Botswana if that person is going to face extradition. But this case of Dr. Nandipa as well as Bester, and I also know the next question people will have is why not the Mozambican national, and I'll come to that. It had nothing to do with extradition because, first of all, they were on the Interpol radar. South Africa is a member of Interpol. At some stage, we chaired Interpol under Commissioner Jikisileri. So they were on an Interpol radar, but they entered the Republic of Tanzania as illegal immigrants, something that we struggle with a lot in South Africa. Now, once you...
So could we learn from how swift the Tanzanians were?
Well, we can, but there's challenges that we are facing. And I think our immigration regulations are very clear on how we should be dealing with deportations. But in this instance, it was not difficult. And there's nothing sinister about this, in my opinion. These people had entered the Republic of Tanzania as illegal immigrants, whether they went under the fence, whether they crossed the river, but they crossed the border illegally. So now once you have people in your territory that are illegal immigrants, the very first thing you do after detaining them is to determine and ascertain their nationality. In this instance, it was not difficult. Even if they had various passports of various countries, one Thabo Bester was a wanted fugitive from law or criminality. But with Dr. Nandipa, she was not a fugitive from prison. She didn't escape from prison. So she was just there illegally. So what happens in this instance is, and South Africa moved very swiftly by sending three important key elements. The police, the top brass of the police were there. The justice system. And then we have the South African High Commission in Dar es Salaam. And they played a role to say to the Tanzanians, Dr. Nandipa is our citizen, is a South African. So when they take the fingerprints and tested them, you can do that in a few hours. Mm. You can go to prison, take the fingerprints, and I've done that several times in my life in a foreign country. Take the fingerprints of the suspect, go to the South African High Commission, or you can actually fax or email them from wherever you are with technology these days to Home Affairs to verify. Once they're verified, Home Affairs will send back to Tanzania a confirmation to say, yes, that's a South African citizen. In that instance, the Tanzanian, because they are sitting with an illegal immigrant, they will hand over that particular illegal immigrant to the Republic of South Africa. And this is what transpired in this instance. But with extraditions, it has to take care of the human element, the criminality and things like that. That's much more complex. There's nothing special about what has happened now. It's a normal process, and due to the bilateral and diplomatic relations between the two countries, it was not difficult to can have them back into South Africa, particularly Dr. Nandipa.
In fact, you've escorted a prisoner from South America, haven't you? A source has told me.
You know, your sources are getting right these days. Yeah, it was yesterday, as many years ago. It has happened that I had to actually escort and fly with a South African citizen who was a drug trafficking prisoner. She was arrested in Brazil, and she spent time. It took me 2 years in my official capacity as a consular official, 2 years to can secure extradition of that particular prisoner. Why did South Africa want that prisoner to be extradited? Not all others who were drug traffickers prisoner. That particular one, she had a mental problem. She was actually a mental patient who was stolen from a mental institution in South Africa.
Oh, wow.
It was kind of by the news. Doctors were involved, people. So she was used as a drug, as a mule to do that. And obviously we had to provide consular services and protection as a citizen of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And it took 2 years to can secure that person back in South Africa. But what was important with that prisoner is that she was willing, you know, people who have studied psychology and all, they will tell you that even an insane person, at some stage in your life, whether under drugs or what, there's a lucid interval where your mind works. Mm-hmm. At some stage, it works normal. You can read it, whether it lasts 5 or 10 minutes. And she started singing. She started talking who she is, where she comes from, her real names, and then she was working with doctors, drug traffickers. Boom! Mm-hmm. Subs got excited and Interpol like, we want that person back into South Africa. The Brazilians cooperated, and we had that prisoner back in South Africa. I don't know what happened after. My duty was to make sure that that citizen has been, you know, escorted back into South Africa. But you know what was funny? Is that in the flight, she was sitting in the first class, and as a public servant, I was sitting in the economy class, but there were Brazilian and South African cops who were sitting in there, and she cooperated all along. So cooperation with authorities and law enforcers is very important. But my concern was the well-being of a South African citizen. Mm. So these are possible avenues that the state could use. And in this instance, I must say, South Africa acted strictly. I know there's criticism to say, no, they didn't do the job, they didn't arrest them. I don't think that's true. We have heard from the authorities of both countries to say it was a joint collaboration, it was a joint effort. There were private security companies involved. And I think the country did the right thing so far by deploying the right people. We missed Home Affairs a little bit there. I think part of that team should have included high-ranking officials of Home Affairs. But anyway, Home Affairs has representatives abroad. You know, they could have had an immigration official stationed in Dar es Salaam. But I think the country has done very well in handling this issue so far. I just hope the justice system, our problem now is the courts and the justice system, to follow procedure and handle this thing as accurate as they've done now, in order not to let this slip through their fingers. Or else, we're going to find ourselves with egg on our face, whereby we had a case, and due to bundling and doing wrong things, then we may lose it at the end.
Quickly, before we let you go, we can't not discuss this. So the Helen Suzman Foundation told the court earlier this week that Minister Aaron Motsoaledi from the Department of Home Affairs decision to terminate the ZEP was irrational and unfair. So as a former diplomat, well, you'll be a diplomat for the rest of your life, but as a diplomat and someone that has dealt with border issues, where do you stand on the ZEP issue?
And I must say, as you stated, where do I stand? And this is in my personal capacity in responding to this. Look, I don't think Minister Motsoaledi acted irrationally. I don't think so. I know personally there were a lot of engagements prior to the Department of Home Affairs arriving at that decision. And it took years. It didn't take months or 2 or 4 meetings. It took years. A lot of aspects were looked into. We should recall and inform the Helen Suzman Foundation that when this ZTE permits were presented, not only to Zimbabwe, we have done it with the Mountain Kingdom of Lesotho as well, you know, the special permits for Basotho living and working in South Africa. When this decision was made, a lot of aspects were taken into consideration. The economic living in Zimbabwe, and it was not asylum seekers running away from wars. It was mainly based on humanitarian as well as economic reasons why those people were already in South Africa. Now, you already have people in millions inside your country. And the best thing you could do at that time
is to
apply your mind and regulate them.
Legalize
them. And we didn't give them South African citizenship and IDs. We did not do that as a nation. What the Department of Home Affairs or the country has done was to register them, give them permits to be in the country with a certain time frame and period and conditions and circumstances. Now, once those circumstances change, whereby Zimbabwe now is still under trade embargo and international sanctions from Europe and the US, but the situation has changed. The government has changed. You know, understand? So there's changes and there's developments in Zimbabwe. They may still have life here. Some have family. Some people came here 25 years back. They've got school-going children. But Home Affairs is saying to these people, come forward.
There are the permits.
come and present your circumstances at a moment in their country, we will listen and we look at each and every application on its merit.
Sure.
And there's nothing wrong with that to say, and they were given time. Remember, they were given 6 months, then it became 1 year. Now it is already 2 years. So in these 2 years, if I was a Zimbabwe general permit holder or special permit holder, I would have actually went to Home Affairs and present my circumstances. But I think foundations like the Helen Suzman Foundation, instead of opposing the state actions and supporting challenges that the country is faced with, we should rather engage and work with the state to try and assist the state. But in trying to go and challenge them in court and challenging Minister Motsoaledi in his capacity as the Minister of Home Affairs, I don't think it's helping the nation. You and many other people on the ground have been trying to say, illegal foreigners are committing that. But these people we are talking about, they're not illegal. We have legalized them to be in the country.
But surely also you can't hold a nation ransom and say, because you let me into your house, I must be allowed to stay indefinitely, when there are other permits that all other nations are having to apply for.
Absolutely.
For instance, I've got friends who lived in Mauritius for the last 10 years, and their kids only know Mauritius. That's where they're born. The kids only know Mauritius. But after 10 years, the Mauritian government said, we don't need your skills anymore. You must go back home.
Absolutely. It has happened everywhere. It has happened with us as South Africans, although under different circumstances.
Sure.
You know, there was a Dukwe camp in Botswana. There were camps in Tanzania and all over the world with stringent restrictions. You couldn't leave the camp. You couldn't just go and live with the society as you wish, and the government does not know who you are. Allow a person in your house, but as the house owner, you understand, or the landlord, you will put terms and conditions of how you stay in my house. And on a serious note, we have to protect our country and territory. And South Africa has never said pack and go. It has never said that to these people. That's not what the Department of Home Affairs and Dr. Motsoaledi have said. They have said, we are giving you a permission to... We think you are overstaying or at a moment we can't anymore. But you know what? That's also a fraction. If you look at 180,000 Zimbabweans with those permits, vis-a-vis 5 million of them who are in South Africa, the Helen Suzman Foundation should actually not be concerned about the 180 registered people who needs to be corrected or upgraded or sent back home. They should look at another 4 million Zimbabweans who are here and they don't have those permits. Because we know, and the government has considered, and the Zimbabwean representative organization in South Africa, they've all said there's between 4.8 to 5.2 million Zimbabweans living in South Africa. Now we want to go and stretch our hairs to talk about 180,000 or 200,000 with those permits. I think we are wasting time and resources on those things. But I think Home Affairs is on the right track.
Botswana, we are out of time.
Thank you.
Always an honor, it's always a privilege hanging out with you and your experience and your mind and your opinions and the way you simplify everything for some of us simpletons.
Thank you very much, and thanks to the followers and the viewers.
And that's it for this edition. Hopefully we've shed some light on a few things. Even if you are watching this in the dark, keep your glow, everyone. Wishing you all a wow week in spite of yourselves. Quickly need to thank AMP Studios for hanging out with us. We love your space. It's an incredible space. Shout out to Africa Podcast Network, Pezulu Works for the cinematography, our audio engineer, magician, artist, The Floor, Fraser, and our guest, Botsang Modimowame Muilwa Langazulu from Algo at Work Robotics Academy, and comedian, businessman, TV presenter, Jason Goliath. Shout out to our creative director, Kuvesh Mohan, our show producer, Keletso Mutisakeng, and you can reach us at www.africapodcastnetwork.com.